Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Now then, Champions League evening ahead. Pat Nevin with us very shortly. 2-1 Schalke against Manchester City. Atletico nil, Juventus nil. Kenny Cunningham in studio. Hello.
Hello, Chal.
So, Kenny revealed about 20 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, he was born with a caul.
Allegedly. I haven't got any recollection of it, but family man informs me.
So you said it was rare. Birth with a caul, it's C-A-U-L, as opposed to end a C-O-L-L.
Well, yeah,
but caul, it's caul.
Yeah.
So in this off-the-caul feature, it is rare, occurring in fewer than 1 in 80,000 births. The caul is harmless and immediately removed by the physician or midwife upon delivery of the child. So effectively, it's just a layer of skin over your face.
Yeah.
The caul is harmless, it says, immediately removed by the physician or midwife. It can be removed by easily slipping it away from the child's skin. The removal of the thicker membrane is more complex.
I forget about that in terms of the medical procedure. I'm talking about in terms of, does it symbolise, is there a kind of bit of...
Give me a minute.
Oh, wives. Yeah, right.
Okay.
An hour by the sounds of it.
We're in no rush here. In medieval times, the appearance of a caul on a newborn baby was seen as a sign of good luck. It was considered an omen that the child was destined for greatness. Oh, bloody hell.
I don't want to say I told you so, but I did allude to it.
That baby.
You don't want to blow your own trumpet, like, but I did allude to it.
That baby's going to captain his country one day, they said. You said that all the doctors and nurses blessed themselves.
Well, yeah, it's kind of quite a bit of religious experience. Like, it's a bit of a blessed thing to be in the presence of
a caul baby. It says here,
is there a black market for these things?
Well, bear with me.
Right.
Bear with me. Gathering the caul onto paper was considered an important tradition of childbirth. So the midwife or physician would rub a sheet of paper across the baby's head and face, pressing the material of caul onto the paper. The caul would
like
then...
Like a shrouded Turin, that
caul,
type of thing.
The caul would then be presented to the mother in this sheet of paper to be kept as an heirloom.
Bloody mash, she was pumped with drugs, I'd say. She hadn't a clue what. Somebody stole that. That's a theft.
So you don't know where your caul is?
No.
Never took it home?
No, my man never took it. He never took it.
1 in 80,000 babies and you should...
Crime scene. I wasn't born 5 minutes.
Just flushed it down the toilet, did you?
Someone's taking that. It's kind of the black mark, isn't it?
Bloody hell, Kenny.
Made someone a fortune.
That is unbelievable. So some early modern European traditions linked caul birth to the ability to defend fertility.
I thought you were going to say defend 1v1 around the penalty box.
Oh dear. And harvest against the forces of evil, especially witches and sorcerers.
Oof. Sounds like I'm a Marvel superhero or something.
Come here, you talk about black market. So Charles Dickens' David Copperfield, published in 1850. Did you ever try and read that? I read that once. Honestly, I just thought it was boring after a while. Mm. Anyway, David Copperfield. I was born with a caul, which was advertised for sale in the newspapers at the low price of 15 guineas. That's a direct quote there. Are you telling me Kenny Cunningham's caul was sold in the Evening Herald?
Stolen.
For
stolen
25
at birth. Literally stolen at birth.
It's unbelievable.
My dad wasn't, he's probably over in the pub, like, he probably wasn't there, so.
The amount of references in literature to babies born with cauls, off the charts here. In Stephen King's The Shining.
Oh, wow.
The 5-year-old son of the main character, Danny Doc Torrance, is born with a caul that made him appear as if he had no face at the time of his birth. A scary enough prospect.
No face.
But come here. Here's the last little bit
kicker.
Of something
Here's
for you.
Here's the kicker.
Notable people born with a caul.
Bring it on.
You don't feature here, okay? So they'll need to amend Wikipedia.
Yet.
Two names jumped out at me.
Yeah, go on.
Number one, Sigmund Freud.
Oh.
Number two, and this is from Wikipedia. This comes with a health warning. Okay?
Mass murderer.
Number two, Johnny Giles.
Is that right, Jeff?
That's right here.
Wow. Both Northsiders.
We need to check if this is true.
In the boat born in the rotunda, I'd say. I'm sure, because John's on the keys there, isn't he?
Yeah, Ormond
Quay. Ormond Quay. I'm just off Dorset Street, stone's throw from the rotunda.
This is freaking me out, Kenny. This is freaking me out. Oh. This is freaking me out now.
I wonder was his stolen as well from the rotunda.
I'm actually freaked out.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, captained your countries.
Small world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Small world, isn't it?
John Jones is in tomorrow. What do you think the first question we're going to ask him is? All right, listen. That was the most unforeseeable but amazing of tangents.
Yeah, all down to Enda.
All down to Enda Call. Spelled C-O-L-L. Okay, so let's talk about these two games because we've been watching them. So in Madrid, it's nil all between Atletico and Juventus. 60% possession Juventus, 40% Atletico. I mean, it's been high intensity. Like, it hasn't been a slow game, but there's been no crazy chances either.
No, a bit feisty. A little bit similar maybe to Liverpool and Bayern last night, Joe, in terms of like two kind of heavyweights, kind of reasonably evenly matched. A bit of a feisty element to a bit of nervous tension around the game.
Bit of treatment for Ronaldo.
Yeah, yeah. Got tag teamed a few times. They always have done Atletico. They have that physical edge to them. In fact, when you look at the two teams, the Juventus team, a little bit more technical in those central areas of the pitch, where Atletico, unsurprisingly, four orthodox central midfielders across the pitch, Costa up front doing his thing.
He's had one of the, he's maybe had the best chance, has he really, one-on-one here? We're seeing a replay of it.
It's a bad miss, isn't it? Yeah. He's done really well. He's just kind of strong-armed Bonucci a little bit, centre of the goal, keeper to be. He's doing the right thing, just opening his right foot up, and that should be a reasonably easy finish inside your right foot. But it's just kind of, it's an odd one. It's just scuffed it. Yeah, yeah, it's a bad miss.
And actually, so he's opened up the foot as if to kind of not put any curl on it. But he needs to put a bit of curl on it. Because
he needs to wrap his foot around it. It's like he's opened his foot, but hasn't kind of...
If he was more left to goal, he could have done that.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, he actually...
Yeah, strange.
It was weird finish.
No, it was an awful finish.
Awful, yeah. Yeah, very surprising. Juventus haven't created too much, so it's even, it's tetchy, it's decent. It's
cagey enough. Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Like I said, it is quite engrossed. Similar to the Liverpool game last night. It wasn't a top quality Liverpool by me. A little bit sloppiness, misplaced passes, but still quite engrossed.
There's a pace to it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Germany, so Schalke 1, Man City, Schalke 2, Man City 1. City took the lead. Aguero, for people just tuning in, it was an awful mistake in the Schalke defence that gifted a goal to City, really.
Yeah, it was. Goalkeeper playing out to the centre half on the edge of the box. City are ready to pound. Silva just takes the ball off and squares it to Aguero. Keepers in no man's land, kicks it into the empty net. Horrible stuff. Mm.
And then VAR.
Oh, do we really have to go there? I've no enthusiasm whatsoever.
Well, it seems after tonight nobody has any enthusiasm for VAR full stop. It's
I'm gonna rename it CPR. Because that's what the game needs after the VAR eventually is.
That's great, Kenny.
Comes to a conclusion. The whole game needs to be revived. It's killing it. This kind of big spin in terms of, oh, it'll be great, the VAR, we'll go to the big screen. Everybody be buzzing. The energy inside the stadium, everybody be biting their nails. It'll really add to the occasion.
Yeah, we had a 2-minute wait there. 2 to 3 minute wait there for one decision.
Yeah, everybody bore to tears. The whole atmosphere is stale. People just saying, just get on with the game. I don't even care if we get the penalty or the goal now. This is killing me. This is it.
Yeah.
This is the reality of the situation what people have to understand. Mm.
Because, I mean, say, unlike rugby is the best comparison, at least as a viewing audience, and I appreciate people in the stadium, it's not great for them. There's the ref link in rugby, but for the majority inside the stadium, you're not hearing the conversation between the referee and the TMO in rugby. But at least the TV audience, which is the vast, vast majority of people watching the game, can at least hear what the ref and the TMO are saying about a decision. Whereas what we're just getting here is the referee trying to wave players away who keep coming over to him, and he's got his hand on his ear, and he's trying to talk to the bloke upstairs. There's no camera on the side of the pitch. Is that gone anymore, or is it just not working tonight?
I don't know. It was my understanding when this was reduced, the referee would always go to the screen, and only he could override a decision, so technically he was still refereeing the game. They would never undermine the referee. But I've seen occasions over the past couple of months, decisions been made by the VAR official, so in effect he is refereeing the game, or they were led to believe just the camera wasn't available on the side of the pitch. But even if you go back, Joe, to the actual penalty kick, what they were actually looking at, the Otamendi handball, for me, it's a decision. You pin down 10 referees, have a look at that, take your time, have a look at it, 10 times, what's your decision? 5 out of those 10 would give it and 5 wouldn't on this particular instance.
Yeah, well, it took a long time. The commentary team on BT tonight were definitely suggesting that there should have been a camera pitch side which the referee could use, and it's not working tonight. and therefore he's having to have long, protracted conversations with whoever's up in the TMO box somewhere. I don't even know if it's on site. It probably isn't. Doesn't tend to be in English football. But so the whoever that fella is somewhere miles away watching on TV is basically telling the referee what decision to give, it seems.
Well, he was tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was actually refereeing the game.
Yeah.
And you could make an argument in terms of whether in the end they've actually come to the right decision. Because some people will argue vehemently that was not a penalty. We know the reasons why penalties are given in terms of handball, in terms of, as I understand, the distance travelled, the speed of the ball and the position of the hand in an unnatural position. Mm-hmm. Now, Otamendi's hand wasn't a natural position, but the key was the distance the ball travelled and the speed of the ball. Had he got time to actually get his hand out of the way, because the ball was actually heading towards the goal.
Yeah.
And the VAR officials clearly deemed he had enough time and it wasn't travelling sufficiently quickly enough where he could have gotten his hand out of the way. But others would say it differently.
It took 2-3 minutes. I mean, it was really slow. The other VAR decision was Fernandinho, and it was a penalty where there was a free kick into
the
box.
Well, he gave it, to be honest with you. He actually gave gave the penalty, didn't he?
And he got confirmation then in his
exactly,
ear.
Yeah.
Cross into the box, free kick. Fernandinho was dragging his man. Referee gave the penalty. And then you could tell he was getting confirmation in his ear.
Yeah.
Barney Rone, who was chatting here, says, VAR is bullshit. Massive delay. People yelling. We're staring at screens. We're yelling at the referee to force a review as well. Horrible stuff. And he says, when you slow it down, everything becomes a penalty or shifty or evil looking. If you slow down the man landing on the moon, VAR would overrule it and book Armstrong. So it's been a bad night for it, you know?
Yeah, I take his point. And to be honest, I'm one of them. I'm not even screaming at the telly now. I can't be bothered. I just can't engage with it at all. It's absolutely total turner for me. I'm really not interested in the whole process and this kind of thing. Over time, we're going to get there. Just, you know, just kind of growing pains a little bit. Let's stick with it. I'm not buying into it.
See, I think it's the right thing to do, and I think it is just growing pains, and I think they will sort it out.
No, I don't think they'll ever sort it out. But just by the nature of the game, in terms of decisions, and they're always opinion based. Some very obvious ones in terms of offside, 5-10 yards, offside. But I can see this expanding out. Nobody's going to be happy with the kind of rigid criteria they're looking at the moment. That's going to be expanded out into all sorts of decisions all over the pitch. And I can see it getting it totally away. I've been here before. I'm even bored talking about it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I've always been against it. I still am. And I still hold on to that very faint hope that we can kind of retrace our steps and go back to where it was.
I won't waste anyone's time getting into a VA or a debate now. On City's performance generally this evening then, so they're
started well though,
in a bit of trouble here now.
Yeah, they started well, but it was that penalty. They were reasonably comfortable, playing reasonably well. Tempo was good, in terms of attitude, fine. But it's obviously disrupted them, knocked them off, lost a little bit of momentum. I don't think it's a disaster. As long as they keep their calm, they should be. They're experienced enough players. Keep calm, play our football. Another 90 minutes after this second half shouldn't be a problem to them. I haven't been overly impressed with Schalke. Yes, they've got themselves into the lead, but you know, as long as they keep their composure, Manchester City, you know, still shouldn't be a problem over the two legs.
No, it shouldn't. It's a strange kind of game, but Schalke 2-1 up anyway. 62 minutes in the clock. Still nil all in Madrid. We're taking a short break. Pat Nevin with us.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. Still no changes. Atletico nil, Juventus nil. Schalke 2, Manchester City 1. 65 minutes on the clock. This Thursday, as you know, we're continuing our build-up to Cheltenham. The Gold Cup with the latest Bulmers Road to Gold event will be at 22 Nightclub in Dublin. We'll have Jarlath Regan, Brian Cooper, Kate Harrington, Vogue Williams, Ollie Bell and live music from Smash Hits, an exclusive off-air event. The only way to enjoy it is to be there on the night, an over-18s event as well. And we're giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets. All you have to do is tell us. Kate Harrington is the daughter of which legendary trainer? Text your name and answer to 53106. We'll announce the winner before the end of tonight's show. And if you do fancy coming along anyway and you don't win tickets, then you can check out offtheball.com/events to get your tickets. So Pat Nevin was with us earlier on this afternoon. Chelsea nil, Manchester United 2. There were chance of F Sarri ball around Stamford Bridge. A lot of the Chelsea fans joined in with United fans singing, "You'll be sacked in the morning." There were reports in the papers today, Chelsea officials quote, taken aback by the level of hostility which has suddenly engulfed Stamford Bridge. And so I put it to Pat Nevin that this situation is suddenly catching fire now.
Yeah, I have to say, at the game, I was pretty taken back as well. Chelsea fans generally don't do that. You remember what they were like with Conte in the final days? They didn't turn on the manager. They didn't even turn on Mourinho while at the ground. Yes, there was complaints on social media, online, etc. When do you not get that? But at the grounds, it wasn't happening. And even at the Etihad in the 6-0 game, there was none of that at all. However, by half-time in the game against Manchester United, the frustration had boiled over and they were booed off the park. And that really is quite unusual for the Chelsea fans. So when the Chelsea hierarchy say they were taken aback by it, they're not making that up. That's absolutely, that's incredibly unusual. I think you have to go back to maybe ABB, the last time that was, head down at Stamford Bridge. So they're not really like that. So that's a massive effect very, very quickly. I think it's been building up for a while. And I think it's just the frustration that a number of things, you know, that everyone has been talking about, Jorginho in that position being the control and influence or not. Obviously, the Kante situation, which most people seem to want him to play in that position instead. But maybe more than everything else, the lack of adaptability. The fans consistently say to me the same thing. It just changes like for like. You know that if Kovacic goes off, it's Barkley that's going to come on.
Yeah.
You know if Pedro goes off, it's Willian that's coming on. And the only time he surprised anybody was when he brought Zappa Costa on the other night for Azpilicueta as the final substitution when 2-0 down. That was a surprise. Didn't get down very well, right? No,
wasn't the best PR move. I mean, everybody knows in that situation, you throw on the striker just to make it look like you're having a go.
Not if you're Sarri. That's just not his way. And we've all got used to it now that he will not change. He's incredibly stubborn. Now, stubborn isn't always a bad thing. You look at Pep Guardiola, he was really stubborn through that first season. But he's losing a lot of the capital that he built up in that first half of the season. And it's losing quite quickly. They're not scoring a lot of goals just now. Away from home, it's been pretty awful, particularly against the top sides. And even though, if you look at it in as positive a light as you can, and I'm doing this purely, you know, for devilment, they're 1 point between them and Manchester United and Arsenal for the top four, so it's still tight. Okay, their form's not good, but it's still tight. They're in a cup final next week or on Sunday. If they beat Spurs in the game after that, suddenly it looks actually not that bad in the league. But the likelihood of them getting through the Europa tomorrow night, which I think they probably will, and winning that cup final and beating Spurs, I think there's not many people betting on that, to be fair.
No, it feels remote. Not to overly dwell on the F Sarri ball chant, you know, but it is kind of easy, interesting to tease something like that out because you could dismiss it very, you know, as a kind of an anti-intellectual, you know, frustration, protest kind of a thing. Like, I think there is just a sense that people feel they're being sold the emperor's new clothes here, you know, that they've had misgivings. These are fans who I suspect go to lots of football matches, who have seen Kante, for instance, perform brilliantly, who have seen good football, who know their football. And they've had misgivings about what Sarri's doing, but they've had the whole Sarri ball thing rammed down their throat, you know? And I just think they've almost reached the end of their tether with it. And it was almost like a collective moment of going, do you know what, actually? We've been told all this nonsense about Sarri. Well, I can see what I'm seeing with my own eyes here. It doesn't work. He's just doing the wrong thing.
Yes, that sounds like the feeling that there is just now. Now, let's be fair to Sarri. He's not the one that was telling you it was all working well.
Yeah.
So it's not Sarri saying that. There was that long period that started the season where they were winning all those games. They went on a fantastic run. And he continually said the same thing. It's not right yet. There's nowhere near this being ready. This is not what I want to do. There's not the players I need. It needs a lot more work. Now, to be fair, he was absolutely right about that. And it would take a long time. And it does take a long time to do something that extreme. The difference is, and the analogy which I've used and many people have used, you know, you had to give Pep Guardiola the time. And a lot of people weren't giving him the time at the start, but they gave him the time. And some of it's because we could see it. We could really see where it was going.
Yeah.
And at the moment, it's really difficult to see, you know, with the group of players that he's got. It's not that they're bad players, but a lot of them are just not suited to that specific style. And also because of the similarities it's got as a possession-based game with Liverpool and with, you know, the likes of, you know, Man City, obviously, it's just a long way behind.
Mm.
And it seems like a long way behind that needs a lot of work and a lot of time. I'm just not convinced that the Chelsea fans want to, you know, put up with that amount of time. They're also used to a bit more excitement.
Mm.
You know, push it on the last 15, 20 minutes. Many teams, you know, if you're 1-0 or 2-0 down, you have a right go at the end, you know, score a goal and all pretty exciting and lumped in the box. You know, it kind of eases it a little bit because you can feel it and see it and you can take part in it and you can vent some of your frustrations, you know, supporting the team as well. But that kind of doesn't happen with this inverted commas Sarri ball. They just keep on playing this kind of intellectual type game. And if it doesn't work, then we're half an hour to go in a game against Manchester United.
Mm.
I was doing co-commentary on it, and I didn't think it was going to work.
Mm.
Maybe 10, 15 minutes in the second half, you're looking at it thinking, they're creating the odd chance, they've got lots of possession. Chelsea had 66% of the possession in that game.
Right.
That's having no effect on you either, is it? Or me, or indeed the Chelsea fans.
Mm.
They have had enough of it, and they want a little bit more of a go. And you can absolutely understand. There's another thing, the Hudson-Odoi thing, which for me is not, I'm not really buying that one at all, but it's another one that's kind of lighting the candle for them because the Chelsea fans are saying, bring him on, he'll do the difference. I mean, kid's 18, you know, good player.
Yeah.
He's almost certainly leaving Chelsea anyway. You're going to annoy Pedro and Willian and all the players that want to stay there to put him on before you. I'm not sure that's absolutely right. And he's not really done it against the top teams. I think he will, and he's got a great chance of it. I think that's a wee bit of a red herring, that one.
Yeah.
The other stuff, no, absolutely. It's getting to a crescendo, and it's getting to a critical mass now.
Yeah, it feels that way. And look, of course, there is something admirable about somebody who has their principles and a philosophy that they believe in and want to stick to it, but stubbornness really is the word. Kind of a cheap question, but given the talent in the squad, is there a quick and easy formation that would improve things dramatically?
I think if it was me, I would be seriously tempted to play 4-2-3-1. Chelsea have played that before and it's incredibly successful. Surprise, surprise, that gives you Kante back in there in the defensive midfield position, standing beside Jorginho, and you've got three attacking players in front of that you can do with the leg and one up front. It's worked for Chelsea incredibly well before, and I think every chance it would work again. It would allow your wide and your attacking players, your full-backs, as it were, to get forward as well because of the cover. And there are a number of things you do. Oddly enough, when you look to, or when I look at Manchester United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you look at the amount of adaptations he makes in that team.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of different systems he's played. Now, you look all the way through it, and including Pep Guardiola, he will adapt the system for certain situations, be it other teams, be it what he's got available. So it's hard to look through that many football teams that have been incredibly successful that never, ever, ever change a thing tactically.
Yes.
You know, unless you are constantly being successful. And that's the thing that's getting to.
Yeah, I would think so. So can you explain something to me then? Really, 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3 and 4-5-1, in my book, are all basically the same thing depending on where the ball is and what kind of calibre of opposition you're up against, you know? Why can't Sarri live with the 4-2-3-1?
Because it's based on purely possession. It's not based on a defensive ethic at all. So if you've got 4-2, that's basically two defensive. There are two that will cover.
Mm.
You know, and the three and the one are beyond that can kind of basically go and attack.
Yeah.
Those six at the back, you can sit there. I mean, you can play there. You will budge, but not that much. Whereas with that system, we have three and a one, all three of them can go and attack. So say you had, if you were Chelsea, you had almost certainly Hazard as the middle of that three attacking. You suddenly got Hazard attacking from wherever he likes.
Mm.
But you've also got a Pedro and a Willian alongside trying to create chances for the likes of Higuain. Now, suddenly that actually just looks and sounds more attack-minded. You've got one more attack-minded player on the field.
Mm.
But you're also more defensively set up because you've got two people sitting in front of your centre-back.
Yeah.
And that, you know, to a lot of Chelsea fans, it makes so much sense because it also solves the problem of N'Golo Kante not playing in what is his favourite position.
Mm.
So, you know, they're looking at that, as you rightly say, football fans are not stupid.
Mm.
They're looking at and thinking, we played that way before.
Yeah.
It was incredibly successful. Mourinho had the success under it. Why don't we at least try it at some point in the game? I mean, a lot of people are shouting for the, like, get Giroud on alongside Higuain and lump it into the box.
Mm.
and that's another possibility. You know, it'll be a cold day in Minsk before Sarri tries that one. I'm telling you, not a hope in that one going to happen. But that's the kind of the feeling there is at the moment. And it's coming to that period now where, you know, I've been at all the games recently for complicated reasons. I happen to be at all the games. And it's getting to that time you often find you're now ticking off competitions. That's one gone. Yeah. FA Cup's gone. Europa League will still be in that. I'm absolutely convinced of that after tomorrow night. But obviously, against City, the likelihood is that one goes as well. I mean, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility. Remember, Chelsea have actually beaten City 2-0 this season anyway. But that was a different type of City team on a different form as well. But after that, they play Spurs. And if we lose against Spurs, almost certainly Manchester United or Arsenal will get away. You're ticking off the competitions now really, really quickly.
Yeah, it's an expensive time. Appreciating everything you said about the formations, in a 4-2-3-1, say it's Kante and Jorginho, surely that doesn't prohibit Jorginho from getting on the ball lots and being a part of possession lots and still playing a possession game. Like, 4-2-3-1 is not a non-possession type game, surely. I mean, this is what I'm kind of failing to see.
Me too.
Okay, good, okay.
So I'm playing devil's advocate. Remember, sometimes when I talk to yourselves or sometimes in radio, I think it's clear what I'm saying to people who are listening. Look, we all know the argument. I'll give you a devil's advocate.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily do that. We've all got different opinions on how we would do it. Now, my specific one would be I would move it to that because it seems suited to the group that you've got there. Mm. You will get the best out of, you will actually get those three players, you know, Willian or Hudson-Odoi, Pedro, and you will get Hazard all on the pitch at the same time, feeding a guy, Higuain, who scores when you give him chances. And to me, that sounds all right. It sounds quite good. It's kind of simplistic because it won't then be a kind of his version of side ball because it's all about angles, positions, and something more complex than that. But if it ain't working, it ain't working.
Well, we know what the Chelsea fans have to say about sorry ball, Pat, so that should...
Well, you never know. To be honest, Chelsea fans, if they did win the game against Spurs, as I say, if they got maybe just, you know, you got beat 2-1 against Manchester City, and, you know, at Wembley, then that can happen to anybody. They're a damn good side. But if they beat Spurs and they're back up and they're in the hunt and they're top four, you know, and by the way, many will know, but some won't know, the antipathy between Spurs and Chelsea is absolutely extraordinary. That would give them a massive lift. And the important thing is, and I keep on going about this Spurs game, it seems as if it's unimportant. It's not. It's utterly vital. And for the simple reason, the next five games that Chelsea have got after that, Fulham, Wolves, Everton, Cardiff, West Ham, all winnable in the league and a chance to go in the run, which leaves you with two questions to ask. If you're going to change the manager, you wait till after Spurs.
Yeah.
Because the next guy gets that run.
Yeah.
If he wins that game, he's got a five-game run where he actually has got a right good chance again. So that I think it all depends, not in the Europa League, not in the Man City game, unless Chelsea get battered out of sight with them embarrassingly again. It's actually down to Spurs.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's very delicately poised, isn't it? Very last question.
The reason why that's the case, I think that's exactly what Manchester United done with Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, remember, no, totally. It's the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer run, that you gift the new manager. Very last question. Did you rate Sarri very highly before he arrived at Chelsea, and has the lack of adaptability tainted him in your eyes?
Rate highly. I often like managers that play football, that entertain me, that I like artistically, that create lots of goals, and they might not win things. I quite like them guys.
Yeah.
The last season's game between Man City and, you know, in Napoli, it was hilarious. You know, nobody's defending. You know, to use a phrase, the cry was no defenders. And there was none. And it was mad. And there's a bit in me that loves that. And I kind of just go out and entertain me. I love that sort of stuff. I'm not running a football club. I'm not having to win. I'm wanting to be entertained. So I know that I'm different in that I put entertainment sometimes actually above winning things.
Yeah.
I'll do that. But I know that I'm unusual. B, I'm not running the business just now, and see football fans want to win above everything else, or at least a lot of them do. I did like Sarri.
You mentioned the well, I guess adaptability is the word if we're using that one, the adaptability of Solskjaer thus far at Manchester United. So it was Matic and Herrera and Pogba and Mata in a diamond last or on Monday night, which seemed to do the trick in many respects. We were impressed with Manchester United.
Yeah, I was dead interested in that. You talk about the diamond there. They sometimes play 4-2-2-2, which is quite an unusual one. Used by Brazilians many times in the past. But what he tends to do away from home is leave two up front. And, you know, the normal thinking is, oh, you're away from home, tough game, one up front, yeah. You know, playing the break. He doesn't. And it's a really clever tactic, not that often used. Mm. And it's working. Whether that's going to work, keep on working in the long term, because people will suss that out, that he's doing that all the time. But that adaptability and getting the best out of those players, I think, is absolutely fantastic. And it's been brilliant so far. It's really hard to see any massive faults. And even against PSG, it was just a better bunch of players that was playing against. Nothing more than that. You know, you sometimes that it won't happen to you against players that are playing really well. So that ability to do that, change it, knowing what is needed. Getting the best out of Pogba, that's obviously phenomenal as well, because that wasn't happening before. But it was a wee technical thing more than that that really impressed me against Chelsea. Everybody knows if you stop Hazard, you generally have got a really good chance of stopping Chelsea. Chelsea played against him, Hazard got the ball. He always had minimum two players marking him, minimum.
Right.
Sometimes it was three. Now and again, it was four.
Right.
And they had all been skilled so well to crush every bit of space. And that's not a fluke. That was Solskjaer.
Yeah.
Well done, him.
Okay. Interesting. On Pogba, by the way, seeing as you were there at the stadium doing co-commentary, when you watch on TV, say for his header goal, for the second goal, and he's put the ball out wide and he's starting this long stride towards the penalty area, and you know a cross is going to come in. It is amazing how every other player in your eye line just disappears, and you were just watching Pogba inching towards. Not inching, actually, it's the opposite of inching. Oh. Making, you know, rampaging his way into the area where the ball's about to arrive. And it's like, I'm watching him because nobody can stop him. I mean, this is just unstoppable force here, and there's no immovable object coming the other way. I'd say when you're in the stadium and he's making one of those runs, it is just one of the most impressive athletic things you'll see, allied to all the technical brilliance we know he has.
Yeah, there's very few players that are capable of doing that. It's a gasp moment, I call it a gasp moment. You go... Whoa! And there's a few doing it, and they're all French. Because right. Mbappe does that.
Yeah.
Mbappe does it all the time. There's a moment where you're high up in the stadium and he does something with his pace, and the whole place who's watching him just goes, oh my God. And he doesn't even need to be on the ball. He's doing this thing where you just think, well, that's unstoppable. Mm. With the physicality that he's got as well, Pogba getting into that position, timed it so well. There's been a lot said about him. He got man of the match. Yes, he made one and he scored one. And people saying, oh, he dominated the game. No, he didn't. He did not. He did well. He was against Kante and it was tough for him. But in the big moments, he did exactly the right thing. And his intelligent play defensively was magnificent as well.
Right.
Dominating the game, he absolutely didn't. He didn't need to on that occasion. He just needed to do it at the right times. And his timing was phenomenal with it. So, yeah, I thought he was really, really good. I thought at moments he was absolutely brilliant. But as you say, I think it's bordering unstoppable when he does that. Mm. And any defender, it's really hard because remember, they're running backwards. So they're running backwards, having to get a possession.
Yeah.
It's the worst situation. The cross was fantastic as well at the right time. You know, it was a great goal, it was a great play, and it was a brilliant tactic.
So I don't know if you caught any of the game at Anfield last night, but we are...
Did you?
Great, okay. Well, you can give us your thoughts on that and then segue us into Manchester United-Liverpool at the weekend, which is just going to be... fantastic. Liverpool haven't won at Old Trafford since 2009. So for all the ills of the last decade, United are generally okay-ish at Old Trafford against Liverpool. But nil-all against Bayern last night?
Yeah, it was kind of an odd thing. It was different phases of the game, wasn't it? Different ways that it went. There was periods where, you know, Liverpool were creating chances and looked really, really lively. But the way this thing was taken out of the game brilliantly by Bayern, you know, playing out most of the time they got it right, not all of the time.
Yeah.
But they held possession for long, long periods and a really clever side. I still think Liverpool can do this. I really do. Just because Bayern are going to have to come on to them, and you've always got, you know, the Firmino Salah thing attacking. They're going to have Van Dijk back. That's going to make a big difference. The one thing that really disappointed me on the night, and it was one player, and it was actually Mane. Now, to be fair, he got himself in good positions. He had a few chances, and well done getting into those positions. But there were two or three, and specifically two occasions, where he should have been drawing the fullback towards him and laying it off to Robertson, who had one on one with the keeper, and he went for the wild shot. And I'm just thinking, Salah doesn't do that. Mm. Firmino will not do that. And that was the difference. That moment where that ball needed that right pass at the right time, fell to the wrong guy. Mm. Manny's a super player, but he's not like the Silvers. He's not like the Salahs. He's not like them. And I think it was his inability to do that. And the reason why it stuck out, there's loads of players that don't make that mistake and get it wrong and are a bit greedy at the wrong time. Lots and lots of players that do that. There's not many at Liverpool that do that. There's not many at City that do that. And there's very few at Manchester United that are doing that just now. Mm. He needs to get that sort of thing right. Mm. Because against the likes of Bayern Munich in the Champions League, limited chances. Mm. Don't do that. Mm. He knew that play, that pass was on. And if he didn't, well, he's not good enough.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what Solskjaer springs against Liverpool on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I was talking to some people. I was in Chelsea today. We were talking about getting teams at the right time. Mm. And Chelsea hit Man United at the wrong time. But everyone's hit Man United at the wrong time because it is their time. And for Liverpool, it is a stinker of a time to get Manchester United, who are fighting, battling. This is it for them. I mean, good luck with the FA Cup. But they need to get top four. They can smell the top four. And I think they put everything into this game. They've got a great chance of winning this game. If everyone's fully fit, it's going to be great. And I think another open game. I don't think it will be one of those dull ones that we've had in the past. The nil-nils where they, you know, cancel each other out. Mourinho ain't there. It's not going to happen. So I think it's going to be an absolute cracker of a game. It's really, really hard one to call. Mm. I really wouldn't want to call it just now.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a good open game.
No, it absolutely will. Listen, great to talk to you as always. Thanks a million.
Looking forward to it. See you soon.
There you are. That was Pat and Evan earlier on this afternoon. So it's all changed in the Champions League. When we last left you, Schalke were 2-1 up on Man City. Then Man City were reduced to 10 men. Otamendi, red card, two yellows. And then just in the last moment or two, Sané with a free kick to make it 2-2. Meanwhile, Atletico have gone 2-0 up on Juventus. We'll run you through everything in just a moment.
Football on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Now then, it's all changed. Well, not all changed, but it's got even better for Man City. Ronaldo's about to hit a big free kick at Atletico. Oh, pulls the back edge of the area, saved for a corner. It's still 2-0 to Atletico. Meanwhile, Manchester City have gone 3-2 up against Schalke. Raheem Sterling with his 15th goal of the season in the 90th minute. Sané with a free kick on 85 minutes to put them back to 2-2. Before that, Otamendi had been sent off and Bentaleb had scored two penalties for Schalke to put them 2-1 up. Aguero had scored the opener for City on 18 minutes. So Sané and Sterling in the last 5 minutes have changed things utterly for Manchester City. And then at Atletico, well, it's been tetchy. Morata had a goal disallowed. VAR, our old friend, popping up again. But then Jose Jimenez and Diego Godin on 78 and 83 minutes have put them 2-0 up. Kenny,
talk to me.
So Morata had a VAR goal disallowed, a bit of a push on Chiellini, and then we thought, well, this is going to finish nil all. But Atletico have taken control of the tie now.
Oh, they certainly have. Although we just mentioned that the whole complexion would change if Juventus could steal an away goal in the final couple of minutes. Doesn't look likely at the moment. And yeah, 2-0 scoreline will put Atletico in a really strong position going into the second leg. They'd really fancied their chances. It's been a good performance from Atletico, just really typical Atletico, Joe, in terms of physically imposing themselves, you know, high energy levels. I mean, it's not as if they can't play. They've got some good technical players in the team as well, but they're kind of pretty relentless, just keep at you, keep snapping away, like real...
Two set pieces,
which they do a lot of work on traditionally with Simeone, but they're pretty standard in terms of forcing out swinging corner, ball just drops loose, quick reactions from Jimenez, and actually good finish from Godin, just dropping to him. Didn't look as if he could score from a Q angle, but Ronaldo kind of didn't do great, kind of turned his back to the ball and it gave him an avenue to put the ball into the empty net. So, yeah, in a really strong position now, Atletico clearly.
Meanwhile, in Germany, even a 2-1 down, we kind of thought, well, look, City will be fine, just don't concede a third and go into the second leg 3-1 down.
Yeah.
And since then, Sané's free kick, people won't have seen it yet.
But I give Guardiola real credit in terms of his substitution. He brought Aguero off and brought Sané on, and it was questioned by a couple of the commentators who were scratching their head, what's he thinking there? But clearly what he was thinking was, in terms of Sané's pace coming onto the pitch, albeit in a wide area, but actually getting Aguero higher up the pitch as a central striker would be a better threat than Aguero going into the last 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. That's exactly how it proved. Sterling actually won the free kick for the Sané free kick, winning the ball and driving at players and drawing the foul. Brilliant execution from Sané.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really. I don't think that is a traditional whip. Do you know that?
It's a dunk.
It was an inside of the foot with a little bit of slice, a dunk thrown in there, sprinkling on top.
Janino whip.
Yes, a little bit of NBA in there in terms of the flight of the ball, in terms of how it dips. But you're right, brilliant execution. And then, of course, Sterling again, the most advanced player, clever little nudge, just put the defender off balance. You've got to be expecting that as a defender. You've got to be ready for that contact.
Yeah.
He wasn't, keeper didn't make his angle of approach wasn't great, but yeah, good finish from Sterling. So yeah.
So they're in good shape.
That's as good as through.
That's us pretty much done. OTBAM 7:45 tomorrow as usual. We'll see you tomorrow here at 7 o'clock, and Tom Dunn is on the way next. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.